It's Sal Capaccio.
Filling up right behind the Bills bench right now with their flags and their hey, 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 hey. Hey, 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 hey. Let's go Buffalo chant.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Let's go. Happy Friday. The Bills wrapping up their third day of practice at training camp. Off tomorrow. Sal Capaccio with us now. Is tomorrow then also an off day for you, Sal?
Yeah, kind of, sort of, from work. Another baseball game to be a part of. I'll be here in Buffalo, and then I'll be heading back either. Haven't decided yet if I'm going back to Fisher tomorrow night or Sunday morning, but I got to be back there bright and early Sunday for sure.
You're painting a pretty good picture these last 2 days, at least, of a kind of a threatening downfield Bills offense. I don't mean to sound surprised. I'm aware they have the literal MVP at quarterback. I mean, there were years when we might have made that into a bigger story that they were sort of, you know, it was working down the field. But is that the right way to put it? You've been tweeting and writing about some highlights.
Yeah, I think so. And I would say today, Mike, they really just kind of used the whole field, right? Today was a day that was just more of a broader type of offense. It wasn't as situational maybe as the last couple of days where we had red zone or third down and things like that. So, today was a little bit more of using the entire field. And I thought that, again, today, a nice day to get the ball down the field a few different times. I think Joshua Palmer was the guy right up wrote about today who really the connection started happening. It's great. Like when you see one day it's one guy, one day it's another guy. It was Curtis Samuel yesterday, Joshua Palmer, and Keon Coleman, I think, starting to ramp up a little bit here and getting some balls thrown his way. So I thought Joshua today was a really good connection. And by the way, Josh Allen, I mean, he was just great the first like 7-on-7. We were, a few media members were on the sidelines going, are you kidding? Like, he is just throwing seeds and putting him in the exact right spot. And I think he had like maybe 7 or 8 of those. And then suddenly he threw one that seemed like maybe a miscommunication. Couldn't tell exactly what happened. Taylor Rapp had the interception. That was it. That was really the first and only mistake.
Yeah. It makes sense that they would be, we talked about this at the outset of our show today, that they would be trying to sort of, I don't know, if redevelop is maybe too strong, that part of their passing game. Because I feel like, Sal, the, you know, all defenses are taking it away. I mean, I think a lot of the time that's the case, but teams aren't always in the same defense, I don't think. So you got to know when you can fire your shot, you know, to, you know, shoot your shot, and you know, being ready to capitalize on that, I think, is important. It's a facet of their offense that was kind of lacking last year, as good as they were. They were great on offense last year, but they did not have much downfield.
It's amazing, right? You think about how great their offense was, how many points they scored, and yeah, they had to really kind of sustain drives more than get the ball downfield in one play. And when they tried, it just didn't happen. You know, if you go back 2 years ago, that's the same thing. I mean, Josh and Stephon Diggs, just remember how many times they were just so close but they couldn't connect on a downfield pass, and Josh really hasn't had that downfield passing game come together for him in a couple of years. So I do think it's an area where they want to get better. I do think it's an area that they wanted to specifically target a couple of players. Joshua Palmer. Now, Joshua Palmer isn't the blazing, burning guy downfield, but he is very good at separation in his own right. He's a one-on-one man beater, and that can allow you to get downfield better. And then we know Elijah Moore can be that guy as well. So I do think that it's something they want to do a little bit more of, and they definitely want to be better at.
You also had a Kincaid highlight today, and for as many times we've talked about him, do you see the Bills making like the requisite effort to get him down the field more himself? I mean, not just the offense overall, but Kincaid, you know, not with exactly the motive of, you know, you've spent the number one pick on him like they did. I'm not thinking that they would be, sort of be of that mind. But still, you've got a talent here. You want to have him healthy. Maybe we're there now. Is more of a downfield to Kincaid strategy going to be a part of this?
Yeah, I think so, Mike. And we can actually use his play as our best of the day today in a minute when we talk about it, because that was the best thing I saw today. But just in him in general, like, I don't think they want to force him being on the field. You'd love for him to be on the field. I think it's got to come first from him. Whereas he's healthy, he's making a difference, he's a matchup guy that they really want to rely on. I look at the tight end room a lot of the way I look at the running back room, which is you have this really talented guy, which he should be, in Dalton Kincaid, just like you kind of do in James Cook. And I understand I'm not comparing the two players necessarily to each other, but overall, you also have guys behind them who can play a little bit. Dawson Knox has done a nice job, right? He's not necessarily what Ty Johnson brings to the running back group, but he's a guy that you feel comfortable with, putting in a lot of different situations. And then they go out and get Jackson Hawes. I think Jackson Hawes really could help unlock Dalton Kincaid, and that is because he can play a little bit more. They can really lean into that 12 personnel they want to use, and they've wanted to use for a couple of years. And if he's on the field, the team has to get a little bit bigger because they see 12 personnel. Now you have Dalton Kincaid out there who might be a bit of a matchup for a safety because a team had to go a little bit bigger than they wanted to because they see 12 personnel. And Jackson Hawes, even though he's got a tight end number, he's out there to block, and you have to respect that.
Poor Zach Davidson. I feel he is completely blocked, right? I mean, he's Kincaid, right? Pretty similar style player, right? Not someone that they're looking for as an inline blocker. I'm not saying he couldn't do it or, if called on, but it's not what he's best at. He's sort of like, I don't know, dollar store Kincaid, it feels like. And I don't know, that guy probably doesn't get a uniform.
Agreed. He could make a nice practice squad career for a number of years and getting, a nice little salary to play NFL football, and that's great. But ultimately, you want a shot to play on the field if you can. And, I've always been impressed with him during training camp and during preseason because the guy just has great, great hands. But he's slight and he's not very heavily built, and he's not going to help you in the running game. And I think that's the issue with, Dalton Kincaid, as we know, whereas can you help in the running game? Can you get bigger and stronger? Can you withstand the rigors of the NFL? So I agree with you. And, the other guy is Quentin Morris, who's gone. Quentin Morris was a big part of this team over the last few years. He actually played in some situational football for them, mainly at special teams, but he could play in a pinch. And there were times where he had to get on the field, but, he's no longer on the team. That was one of the only real losses they had. It was the wide receivers, Mac Hollins and Amari Cooper, and it was Quentin Morris, really. That was all from the entire offense. So that's where Jackson Hawes come into play. But you're right about Zach Davidson. I agree. Poor Zach Davidson. Maybe his shot. The guy was a punter in college, too, by the way. He's a really good athlete. Maybe his shot just has to come with another team down the road.
The rare tight end / punter. Central Missouri State, by the way, Zach Davidson. Well, we were on Kincaid. You already gave us the tease. The best play of training camp today brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Get a Northtown Engine Shield engine protection warranty on new and used vehicles. Let's hear about it.
Yeah, Josh Allen, 11 on 11, Dalton Kincaid. He's running basically like a fade / corner pattern down the left sideline. You see the ball in the air. You see Kincaid. You know he's tracking it. It's going to get there. Like, I could see from my vantage point about 20 yards away, okay, this is a good pass. Like, he has a chance at this ball. But Cam Lewis was right there. Cam Lewis, I think, has had a really strong start here the first few days. And he's just Mr. Steady, as you guys know. But he's not the biggest guy, right? Dalton's got some height on him. He's one of the smaller DBs. Cam is in great position, but it didn't matter. That ball was just thrown perfectly over the shoulder, the left shoulder it would be, for Dalton Kincaid. He comes down with it. Guys, Cam Lewis goes to the ground as he's trying to make the play. And they both went to the ground. They weren't trying to tackle. It's just the way the play develops. And right after it, Cam Lewis gets up, looks at Dalton Kincaid with the ball in his hand, and just shakes his head as if, I cannot believe he made that play.
Right. Speaking of Cam Lewis, there's a couple of rookie defensive backs here on the depth chart, and I wonder if Lewis should be looking over his shoulder, hearing footsteps, however you want to put it. They're not exactly... well, we'll see how versatile they are, because that is Cam Lewis's calling card, right? But Jordan Hancock and Dorian Strong, I don't want to confuse the two. I see Strong listed as a boundary corner and Hancock as a free safety. One of those two is being used in a variety of ways, though, similar to Lewis. Is he not?
Yeah, that is Jordan Hancock. Hancock, when he was drafted, I mean, immediately you're like, oh, this is Cam Lewis. Like, he's exactly what Cam Lewis is. He is a back. He's a nickel corner and a safety. And they have, from the jump, they've been telling us, we're going to use him in both places. We just have to figure out where he fits best and where to use him most. So there's a number of different ways you can go about this, Bulldog. It's a really great conversation and discussion because Cam Lewis has been so valuable to them at safety and at nickel corner. Like, you don't want to lose that, but at the same time, if you have a really younger guy who went to Ohio State, good player, he can play both, you could say, okay, well, guess what? It's time to move on. It's time to go younger. But at the same time, I believe, and I think this is how it might shake out, where they may say, look, instead of having these guys train at both spots, we can keep them versatile, but why doesn't Cam just become our main backup nickel and he can play special teams? And Jordan Hancock is a main backup safety where we don't have to put more on the plate. And then he can gain a little bit more on his plate as we go. I think there's room for both guys on this team. I really do. That doesn't guarantee it. There's only a finite number of spots, and it's a crowded defensive back room. Dorian Strong is mainly a boundary corner, but he can also play a little bit inside, and he says he prides himself on being able to do those things. I mean, the guy is he's a bigger dude. He's built like he looks like an NFL corner. His dad, Dorian Strong's dad, is a professional bodybuilder and weightlifter.
Can't be bad.
It's the guy who knows his way around a weight room, you would assume. I wonder if maybe Strong, maybe Dane Jackson is the guy that's hearing footsteps when you say his name.
You know what, Bulldog? I did a projected 53 recently, and I have to be honest, I didn't have Dane Jackson on. I think it's a numbers game, and that's not because I don't think Dane Jackson can play. I think he can. But who are you? Are you going to release Dorian Strong and subject him to waivers? Like, that's a tough call to make. How can you do that? You're not releasing Jordan Hancock. You have Tre'Davious White. You have Max Harrison. Jamarcus Ingram and Dane Jackson, to me, could be fighting for one spot, but Jamarcus Ingram is versatile. He plays inside. He plays outside. You know, the thing about Jamarcus Ingram is he can play safety, and he can play dime safety, and he's done that. Like, boy, that's really valuable for this team, to be able to guy to come in and play that role, right? And he took over for, you know, Cam Lewis when Christian Benford was hurt and they had to, you know, go through a couple guys. I'm sorry, maybe not Benford, but a couple guys were hurt over this year. And, you know, Damar Hamlin and, boy, Jamarcus Ingram played a nice role for them. So it is a crowded defensive back room. There's not enough spots for everybody. And I agree with you. I think Dane Jackson could be the guy at the end of the day who's maybe on the outside looking in.
And further,
and by the way, Damar Hamlin, for that matter.
Right.
I mean, Damar Hamlin could be a guy that at the end of the day, like, where does he fit? Derek Forrest was signed, and I think they like him as a backup safety. But if you're putting Jordan Hancock there, you have Cam Lewis, where do these spots come from?
Further complicating numbers in the secondary is that their primary returner is a corner as well. That I don't know, you know, I know he played the finale, but it's not a guy that gets snaps as a corner. He's here to return kicks, and you already have an overcrowded room there. That could be challenging.
Yeah, that's Brandon Codrington, and I think, you know, you guys know, we've talked about it enough that I'd be surprised. I'm here to tell you, I think I'd be surprised if Brandon Codrington isn't on this team. I think he's the main punt returner, and I don't care what position he plays. I think the Bills just need a guy they really trust, and that could have DB next to his name or wide receiver next to his name. But yes, there is always that possibility and chance, as people bring up and tell me, and I agree with them, that, man, if you get to it and you just got to save a roster spot, you might have to go with Elijah Moore. But, man, the Bills, they treat that position as a position.
Yeah.
They don't treat the position as, well, where's a guy who plays somewhere? And not for nothing, they've been working Brandon Codrington inside. And I think that's to make sure that, hey, if we're going to keep him, let's make sure he has a spot just in case something happens and we can use him in a pinch.
I was planning to ask you about him because I read from your article, I believe, that Sunday, when the Bills are back at work, it'll be the special teams coordinator that speaks. And I don't have much for specific questions about special teams at this point. Say what you want in the chat. I mean, I do the best I can here. But Codrington, I think your take on this is very logical, you know, and plus including the fact that you'd want to have some better confidence that he could play on defense if needed. But punt returner and kick returner, he might be tough to unseat.
I agree, and that's where I come from. Now, I get it. He did not play last year in the playoffs. They went to Khalil Shakir. Well, Khalil Shakir just got paid $58 million. He's not returning punts this year. Sorry, that's not happening. Now, you could put him back there in a pinch like you did Micah Hyde for a few times the last few years. That's fine. But the reason why they used Khalil Shakir was twofold. It was because Brandon Codrington was dealing with an injury. And even though he might have been able to play on Sunday, if he can't get all his reps and do everything, if you're not super confident throughout the week, so you using guys back there and, you know, making sure that you're buttoned up, when it comes time for Sunday, you're like, all right, let's not let anything wrong. He's coming off this injury. All right, let's go to Khalil Shakir. And the second reason is Khalil Shakir's done it. He's good at it. They trust him there. It's funny, guys. I talked to Brandon Codrington today about this, and I said, what does Sean McDermott look for in a punt returner? He actually surprised me in his first word. He said aggressiveness.
Like,
right. He said, right. And then he said, He said, but first you do have to make sure you catch the ball. You've got to catch the ball. He said, but he wants us to be aggressive. And I thought, all right, that's a really good answer to hear from Brandon Codrington.
Yeah, wouldn't most fans have guessed catch the ball would be the first thing he would say? He did get to it, right? But aggressiveness is an interesting take. Before we leave the secondary, Tre'Davious White spoke today. And that just listening to him talk about being able to work out like a normal player would work out, like prior to all the injury troubles. I mean, it was, you know, two off seasons in a row that got derailed really for him by injuries and not really being able to train normally. And hearing him talk about that and how, I don't know, quite call him defiant, but like, man, I feel like he might be hard to move off of that corner two spot, and it's only 3 days into camp.
Listen, I think that Max Harrison has to really go out there and show that he can win it. You know, Tre'Davious White is a great team player. Every time I see those guys kind of sub in and out for each other, they're dapping each other up, giving a high five, whatever, it's great. But Max Harrison wants that job, and Tre'Davious White wants the job as well. I mean, he's a competitor. He's going to do whatever he can. I think that it's going to be tough as well. And that's because Tre'Davious White, I think, is very, very determined to get back to being Tre'Davious White. Now, I don't think that there's, you know, going to be – I don't think we're looking at all-pro Trey from a few years ago. But if this guy, you know, the way that he works, the way that he thinks, I think he has every belief in the world that he can be really, really good player in the NFL still. And he has plenty of time still to do that. The other part of it is, boy, Bulldog, I mean, you can remember when he got hurt, right? And we had discussions about, like, how he handled it with the media – the things he said when he finally came back. We didn't talk to him for quite a while. Like, this is a guy that he really, really dealt with a lot mentally when those injuries happened. And it's so funny. I watch him, talk to him, see his interactions. It just feels to me, and I think it's clear to everybody, that he is so unlocked and free right now compared to that. He really is. And, you know, as personally, as someone who's married to a mental health counselor, as you know, people, you guys who know how much that particular piece in life has become so much more, so much bigger that people talk about and recognize. And the fact that he's in Buffalo, where Sean McDermott and this regime and this organization really take that to heart. They want guys to embrace the mental health aspect of it. And Sean always says it is a strength, not a weakness, to make sure you're talking to people and make sure you're in a good headspace. Like, I just think all of that is really coming around for Tre'Davious.
How close to 100%, like whatever peak would be for him at age 30, does he say he is?
I don't know. Did he say that today? I'm not really sure. I don't know. I can't answer that because I can't remember if he said anything.
Okay. I just wonder, like, what does he have left is the bottom line here. I mean, he's feel good in a lot of ways. The other guy's a first round pick this year. Like he's gonna get on the field himself. So I just wonder, like, after the Rams experience and then Baltimore, what it's fair to expect from Trey White.
Yeah, I think it's fair too. And yeah, you know, I don't know if we're gonna know till we get out there. Look, during OTAs and minicamp, I love the way he was moving, but then he got beat a couple of times by Elijah Moore down the field, right? So, you know, we can talk all we want about this stuff, but he's gotta go out there and prove it. He's gotta show that he can still, you know, hang with receivers down the field. I think that Tre'Davious White has every belief in himself. He has every confidence in himself. If we did ask him that question, he'd say, I'm 100%. I feel 100% like I can go out there and be everything I've always been. I think more than anything that mental component is so big from him. When he talked, when he resigned about how he did not know, and how could he ever know that was going to be his last time on the field with Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde, the perspective he got after leaving the organization and being with other teams and being away from those guys, away from the Buffalo Bills. And I remember talking to him. We talked about this guy's when it happened. Tre'Davious White said to me in the tunnel, after he just had his season end against the Baltimore Ravens, we were walking up the tunnel together, and I said, hey, man, you're going to be a free agent at the end of the year. No, what do you think? And I kind of like jokingly said, you want to come back? And he goes, oh, I'd love to be back here. I've already let it be known to people.
Wow, right after that game ended. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it really will be interesting because – the last time the Bills used a first-round pick on a corner, he couldn't get on the field. And so, like, and it's Tre'Davious White. It's not just some guy that nobody knows, right? The organization knows him. There's emotions there. But the team, I think, would be motivated, kind of like Mike said a minute ago, to get Harrison on the field. And I don't know if they'd be thinking at all about Kyer Elam in this, but I'm sure fans will be. Oh, we got another corner that can't. If Tre'Davious White wins that job, it's going to be loud. Because you got another corner that couldn't win the job that was drafted in the first round, like Elam, and like that's a tough brush to paint a kid with in Hairston, who, you know, hopefully will turn out better here than Elam did, but it could get complicated.
I agree. It will get loud. Will it be fair, though, I think is the question, right?
Sure.
Is it fair to go, well, here's another first rounder that can't get on the field? It might have nothing to do with Max Hairston. Right, I think eventually we realized it was more on Kyer Elam than it was anything else.
Right.
Christian Benford did a nice job to win the job, and then look who he is now. But, you know, Kyer Elam never really was able to hit, and now he's with another organization. This might be because Tre'Davious White's just making it too hard. And, you know, he's a guy that was an all-pro not too long ago. And, you know, he comes back, and they can trust him. They know what to expect from him. And, you know, I don't know if that's fair to put on Max Hairston, but I agree with you because of the other part of that, which is, when people say Sean McDermott doesn't play rookies and, you know, he's too tough to play rookies, and I don't think that's fair at all either. But the reality is that Max Hairston might not be on the field week one. It might be Tre'Davious White.
Sal, I'm mostly kidding when I say we missed one here. For all the time, quote, time and effort we put into trying to predict the schedule, I could have used to know this rivalry game thing. And might have had a better chance of predicting the Bills and the Patriots would play in prime time, for example, wearing these fancy uniforms.
Well, okay, you're right. I don't think that, because I knew, like, it was announced a while ago that the NFL would do that, even before the schedule, I believe.
Yeah.
That there was going to be this rivalry thing, and it did say it would be a division game. But I never thought, well, you're going to put a prime time game against New England for that. I just thought, okay, maybe a Sunday 1 o'clock game is you have these rivalry uniforms. Who knows what it's about? But, yeah, now they've announced it, and it made sense. Once the schedule came out, though, I did a little reverse tracking here, and I said, oh, you know what? I bet you that's the rivalry game. Like, why else are you going to have New England here on a Sunday night, Diggs return, all that? Like, to me, that's the rivalry game. That's where they're going to put it. Thursday night, Miami makes sense anyway, but why do you put New England on? Okay, that's perfect, because now we already knew. Then once they said the Jets were going to be that last game with the red helmets, it totally made sense. You only had two choices anyway. It's got to be that game. But you're right. You know, we kind of didn't know that, but I know that people have to wait till August 28th. I mean, I have people telling me, don't worry, it'll be worth the wait, so we'll see. I know there's a video of the guys looking at it for the first time going, holy cow, these are great.
And not all the games are going to be night games. Like the Jets and the Dolphins is in, right, I think, week 14, and that's not a primetime game. So it would have just been, I'm sure it was me who missed it, not that the league didn't tell us it was coming, but just would have been one more thing I could have, had I been smarter,
thrown into the sauce.
Factored, yep. Thrown into the sauce. Oh, well.
Well, two things real quick. Number one, you have to remember now, so that means they're going to wear their rivalry uniform, that Nike rivalry series, week 5 against the Patriots. They're going to wear their AFL throwback classic standing Buffalo week 6 at Atlanta Monday night, then week 11 against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and then week 18, you know, they're wearing the throwback red helmets. So that's 4 times this year they'll be wearing a normal 2025 Buffalo Bills uniform. The other thing is, just to follow up on yesterday, guys, remember I said to you yesterday, boy, I bet you Matt Milano played linebacker in high school, right?
Running back, you said, yeah.
I'm sorry, running back, yes, running back in high school. Saw his dad today. I know Matt's dad a little bit. I saw his dad. I said, I got to ask you a question. I said this on the radio, and he goes, oh, Sal, he was phenomenal as a running back in high school. And his high school team went to the state championship game. He said they also had a couple other good guys, so they actually used them, unfortunately, at tight end, maybe a little bit more than they should have in the state championship game. But he said, oh, he was great at running back in high school. And I said, all right, I could see it. Because the vision, right? The vision at linebacker reminds me a lot of a vision of a running back. So I followed up, and sure enough, Matt Milano played running back in high school, and apparently he was very good.
All right. Enjoy your weekend. Bills in pads on Monday. We'll talk again then.
All right, you got it, guys.
All right, there you go. Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline, and training camp coverage here on WGR is brought to you by Fiegel, Carr, and Joyce, your border attorneys. By Outlet Liquor, when you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Connors and Ferris, your workers' comp attorneys, and driven by your Upstate Honda dealers for great deals on the entire Honda lineup. Visit your Upstate Honda dealer today.
We'll take a break. Come back after sports. Lines open for your calls at 803-0550. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog WGR.
Massive human on like ballerina legs. Like if you could take a bear and put ballerina legs on him, like he literally is a dancing bear, like one of the biggest guys I've ever been around. But he moves so fluently. And if you look at his legs, he got these athletic legs and then a big upper body. And he just fluent. Some big guys like he's like doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo.
Okay. Ed Oliver on Dion Walker. A bear. Stay with me. I loved that. A bear with ballerina legs. A dancing bear. He did it better.
Yes, he did.
Much better. Good job, Ed Oliver.
Ed Oliver cover band over here.
Yes. So just before with Sal, the last part of our conversation was naturally, because this is how it is now, about clothes and what the Bills will wear for different games. In that last game, it's the regular uniform, but with the red helmet, which reminded me about this weekend in baseball. It is throwback cap weekend in baseball.
Okay.
Wish I'd thought of it when Sam was on. He was talking about going to see the Dodgers at throw out the record books, Dodgers and Red Sox. They did play in a World Series, I guess. But the Dodgers are wearing the Brooklyn cap all weekend. The B.
Okay.
Everybody's wearing their regular uniforms.
Just different caps.
mostly different hats. I mean, the Yankees hat looks the same. The Royals hat looks the same. So Boston, they're not wearing the red hat. They're wearing the usual navy blue Red Sox hat. But some are pretty cool. The Marlins are playing now in Milwaukee. And the Marlins are wearing, I had this hat. I wish I still had it. I don't think I do.
I looked at a Marlins hat today, just came across my feed, and I thought, ooh. The color was that what is that teal, whatever their greenish blue color is that they use. It looked so good.
That's the original hat that they wore when they were new that they're wearing today.
That's probably why I saw it in my feed.
Right.
Because I shop for new era hats pretty regularly, and I'll bet that hey, here's a new thing that's happening this weekend. you buy our hats. Look at this.
It's because of the Hall of Fame this weekend, Hall of Fame ceremony. Okay. So some teams are going to look kind of funny. Like, that's not at all the Marlins uniform anymore.
Right.
In fact, there's an F on the hat.
Right. Right.
And they're
the
Miami now.
Marlins now. Right.
Yeah. But, you know, fine. And Milwaukee is wearing the hat they wore when Hank Aaron played for the Brewers, which is just a big yellow M. A big block yellow M.
All right.
Before they went to the glove. The brilliant Milwaukee Brewers logo with the M and the B. So, there you go.
If I get some golf clothes to match that Marlins hat, I may pounce. I may. The hat could push me to get clothes to match the hat.
Oh, actually. You sure you want to do that?
I got to keep up appearances, Mike.
Teal?
Yeah.
Big and bright?
Yeah, fine.
Like a ballerina with a bear. Body.
Yeah, there it is. I will be a ballerina. I don't know about the bear or the ballerina part.
You got the bear part.
I got the bear part down.
The Blue Jays hat, I don't think this is what they wear now, but I get confused because sometimes I just always picture teams in their old stuff. The Blue Jays have the white panel, like in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
or even after that, the white panel and then the logo. That's Toronto. I saw some of their game last night in Detroit.
Me too.
Blew them out.
Yep.
Took a while, but they blew them out.
Yep.
Everything went their way.
Yep. You said yesterday, watching it, of course, I had the Tigers minus 1.5. Watching it, I thought, I should have listened to you. You said, they're running so pure right now.
They are.
At one point, I think that was on the air. It was possible it was off. We were talking about them a little bit on and off the air yesterday, I think. But, yeah, not a good bet. But, yeah, they're rolling.
Well, it was one of those games, like, they hit balls where the Tigers were positioned way over there and the ball, like, Guerrero's double, Somebody hit a bloop into right field, and the right fielder was so playing the batter in the gap. You just no chance. I mean,
yeah.
they got a little lucky. The Tigers intentionally walked a guy to bring up Clement, and he hit a 3-run homer.
Yeah, like, I was just watching when that happened, yeah.
And then the next guy homered, Lo Perfetto. So right. Everything's going right for Toronto lately. Do you have a favorite baseball hat? Do I have to say cap? I probably should say cap. That's what it is.
Yeah. Well, before I answer that, because you mentioned the Dodgers wearing the Brooklyn logo. It's a normal style, like a current contemporary hat, cap, right? It's not. I have a couple of those. I was with you when I bought them. I got an Orioles hat and a Red Sox hat that are like styled from the 40s.
Yeah, like, kind of round.
Yeah, like those would look really cool. I don't know that they're really practical to wear because I don't wear mine that often. They fit funny, right? They don't sit on your head the way a fitted cap normally would.
Yep.
But I'd love to see the Dodgers in like those old wool heavy caps, but that's probably not realistic.
I don't think we're gonna get that.
Yeah. Favorite, you know, the Oriole, the Earl Weaver cartoon Oriole. I like a lot. I've always liked that cap.
I think they're wearing that again.
Yeah, I think they are too. For a while, they had like it looked too much like the Cardinal. Like
it gives you a chance to say the word ornithologically if you want.
I'm not even going to try to say that.
Ornithologically correct.
I don't think I could get that out without making a fool of myself. But when they had the full bird, I didn't really like that. They've had like an O, like O's, you know, with the apostrophe. Now, give me the cartoon bird. We had a hat, a cap. Excuse me. See, I'm doing the same thing here.
I'm fine with it.
Cap. I think I've told the story before. We met Boog Powell at Boog's Barbecue. The kids were really little, and every time we went to a ball game, it was like buy, you know, whatever. You go to the souvenir. You're with kids, so we got the Orioles cap that was, I'm trying to remember what the color, it was like two colors on it and that logo, like a white front panel, kind of like the Blue Jay thing you were just describing.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the bill of it is orange. Such a cool hat. And that logo, Boog Powell autographed it and we left it in the hotel room.
You left it behind.
We mistakenly left it in the hotel room.
To think you could be wearing it right
now. Didn't realize. Well, it fit Owen. So
well, that would be small.
Although he does have a big head. But, you know, he might have been 6, so I bet it wouldn't have fit me. And, you know, we didn't realize until we were like, you know, 3 hours down the road. Like, we're not going back for a baseball cap.
No, 3 hours is too much.
But that might be my favorite cap. That Orioles cap.
The 70s Orioles.
That logo on it. Man, I like that cap a lot.
You won't like them this weekend then? Because their throwback is from like the 50s.
Another
a different bird, so to speak. They have the Rockies this weekend, so probably won't be watching much of that anyway.
No, probably not.
Cleveland is wearing an old hat of theirs that looks more like the Reds. The C looks very much like the Reds.
Mm-hmm.
The Reds' C is a little bigger and skinnier than Cleveland. Otherwise, I think they're identical. Very close.
I've seen that logo before and thought the same thing. It's in the Cleveland colors, so you know it's Cleveland, but I thought, that looks just like the Reds logo.
Yeah. And the Reds hat this weekend is blue.
Whoa.
How should that be possible?
That seems...
That's witchcraft.
How
is the Reds hat blue?
Unethical is not what I want here, but that just seems wrong.
It just seems wrong.
It's not seem... What are you doing?
Throwback cap weekend in baseball all 3 days. Time out here. We'll talk to Mike Dempsey. Get a little fantasy football in. It is that time of year. When, isn't it? I know that's what you're thinking, but... Drafts are coming up. He covers the Jaguars. He's been on with us a few times. We'll talk about that team with Mike as well. That's at 5. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here, WGR.